He could paint all the nails any color he wanted and say, beautiful, and mean it. Beautiful and mean it. When we say something is beautiful, what do we mean? When we say someone is beautiful, what do we mean? Is beauty important, even, or should we ignore it? What does beauty have to do with our spiritual lives, with ethics and meaning? It used to be in ancient times that beauty was considered objective, an inherent quality that existed in certain things, sunsets and artwork and poetry and such. But in the Enlightenment, folks focused on the perceiver, that we each had our own senses. Folks like Bishop Berkeley wondered even how we knew that anyone's perception was even close to ours. And so beauty was subjective in the eye of the beholder, a matter of individual taste. The philosopher Immanuel Kant wrote A Critique of Aesthetics, one of his less read books, but one of the most important, I think. He tried to thread the needle and say that taste, the appreciation of beauty, was something universally held, though the application might vary. Some have tried to follow this thread, this suggestion, to say that there is something about beauty that's connected to goodness, to what is right. That when we see someone be kind and generous and caring, we say, that's beautiful. When we see children hug, or we see a grown child comb the hair of their dying parent, we say, that's beautiful. When we see wildness and flowers and color, we say, that's beautiful. We'll talk about that next week, the beauty of the earth. But also the converse. When we see someone be cruel, we say, that's ugly. Both the philosophers Hannah Arendt and Jacques Derrida argue that conscience is in large part about what we find to be beautiful, that ethics is largely about aesthetics, that there are not universal, hard and fast rules, but a set of heart judgments made at the emotional level of awareness. And yet there is something that is shared between almost all human beings, a sense of affection for decency. Arendt in particular points to the social quality of conscience, that we learn to judge what is good and what is beautiful through empathy and through training, what the society around us teaches us to admire through habit, what we come to love each day. And religiously, I will tell you that this is absolutely true. In words attributed to Emerson, that which dominates our imaginations and our thoughts will determine our lives and our character. It behooves us to be careful what we worship, for what we are worshiping, we are becoming. We learn to appreciate certain things. And folks figured out a long time ago that if they can make us find something beautiful, then they can make us buy it or give our lives for it. Moreover, what counts as beautiful changes through time. We know this. It used to be that skinny was ugly, and if you didn't have a 6-inch beard, you weren't a real man. We know that fashion changes all the time. Art, too. Walk through any art museum organized chronologically, and you'll see how beauty changes over time. Ethically and religiously, this is true too. People used to worship God's power, and then some began to worship God's compassion, and others said, traditionally understood, God's power and God's compassion are mutually exclusive. Some used to find beauty in kings and queens and shiny objects and glorious refinement, and many still do. But now some folks want a tiny house and a minimalist design. The advertising industry was stronger in the 20th century than it is now, or it was before then, but the shaping of desire has always been with us. This is what you're supposed to want. This is what is beautiful. That dress is so last year, now you need this one. Why would you listen to Lawrence Welk? Don't you know Johnny Mathis is the new star? You can see this trope in cheap fiction and bad children's stories and predictable movies. The hero is conventionally attractive, a chiseled jaw, well-developed tricep, flowing hair, and often, more often than not, snow-white skin and bright blue eyes. Meanwhile, the villain is blotched and bloated, conventionally unattractive by society's standards. And that's what got me thinking about fairy tales. As the first reading describes, the trope of the grim fairy tale is that the beautiful good hero or heroine must overcome the treachery of the evil and ugly villain. The wolf tries to eat sweet Red Riding Hood. Beautiful Cinderella is covered with ash, but once she gets cleaned up, she outshines those stepsisters, and so on. The Disney versions of these stories amp this up, of course. The stepsisters in the animated version, some of you remember, are misshapen with unpleasant voices to boot. The beautiful mermaid is threatened by the ugly sea witch. But there are exceptions, and those are the ones I want to see for a moment. Beauty and the Beast, of course, which is enjoying a revival. Gaston is handsome and strong and brave and a total jackass. The audience is in on the joke from the beginning. We know he's evil because we've seen his private encounters, but the story reminds us not to follow the crowd. Truth be told, the Beast ain't that great shakes either. Maybe Belle should find someone who doesn't try to control her so much. I'm just saying, look elsewhere. Or how about Snow White? The beautiful but austere queen is so attached to her beauty, at least to the beauty on the surface, that she decides to murder Snow White to gain her trust. To gain her trust, she disguises herself as an old witch, a hag, and Snow White, thinking that means innocence, eats the apple, and then is thus expelled with Adam from the garden. Oh wait, that's a different story, isn't it? Something Jungian about the subconscious going on there. The dwarves are good, and the animals are friendly, and the prince is always handsome, or something like that. More modern children's stories try to subvert this a little bit. One of my favorites is Princess Knight, with a K, Princess Knight. When the princess, raised by her father after her mother dies in childbirth, would much prefer to wear armor than a frilly dress. And then there's Cinder Edna. Do any of you know Cinder Edna? Edna is Ella's neighbor, and she marries the prince's nerdy younger brother. And while Ella grows bored with being the princess and all the military parades and the fancy costumes, Edna and the younger brother foster kittens and learn to compost and tell each other jokes. It's a great story, if you're looking for a good story. People make mistakes. Holding their own, thinking they're alone. Witches can be right. Giants can be good. You decide what's right. You decide what's good. You decide. There's no one to tell you, though you are not alone, but you have to decide. And giants can be good, which is to say the shortcut that the conventionally beautiful person is the good person is not always useful. The association between attractiveness and morality is a mistake. You decide what's good, not by looking with your eyes, but by looking with your heart. Which is to say, it's not that beauty and goodness are not connected. It is to say that the connection runs the other way. At least it should. When we see goodness, when we see kindness and mercy and warmth, then we should mark that in our heart as beauty. And we should look deep. to see not the easy grace of the privileged, but the strong resilience of the survivor. Not the easy grace of the privileged, but the strong resilience of the survivor. Not innocence, but wisdom. Not princes or princesses laughing and dancing, but dads and moms exhausted at the end of another day, but ready to get up the next one and do it again. He could say, beautiful, and mean it. I like the fairy tales where the heroes are a motley collection of cast-offs, the ones society doesn't see, the wanderers and the unexpected ones, the huntsman whose conscience refuses to let him cut out Snow White's heart, the vampire with a soul who fights to keep the demons at bay, the knight who was banished for good cause and lied about it and tried to reform and failed and tried again and again and again and was never perfect and never will be but wanted to be better. The smuggler who fights for the rebellion. I like these guys. The forgotten daughter of the king who rides off to war and puts on armor, and when the evil immortal right says, no man can kill me, she removes her helmet, her hair flows, and she says, I am no man, and ends him with a well-placed thrust to the head. I like her. I like the stories where the heroes don't always know what to do. And you're not sure you're who you're supposed to root for. Where the beauty shows up after the battle, in the way the wounded care for each other. And I like the stories where nothing dramatic really happens, but people live their lives, cook for each other, walk down the sidewalk holding hands, where children grow up and become grandparents themselves, and the earth spins and we do the best we can, and sometimes we make art or sing a song and we love each other. That's heroism enough, isn't it? That's beauty enough, isn't it? So I invite you to cultivate a different desire, to see a beauty deeper and more true than what's on the surface, to remember that witches can be right and giants can be good, and that you have to search inside yourself to know what is truly glorious to the senses and worthy of praise. I invite you to breathe in and breathe out, to see past the makeup in order to see the soul, to see past the muscles or lack thereof to see the strength of will, to see past what is shiny in order to see what is true. I invite you to say, that's beautiful, and mean it. I invite you thus into a fundamentally religious practice, to turn away from idolatries of beauty and to see what is genuinely beautiful, even if it's more complicated. As the story goes, the Hebrews wandering in the desert for 40 years were tired of not having a God they could see, of this mystery, this cloud. They wanted to worship something familiar, and so they made a golden calf. It was glorious. It wasn't real. It would not save them. Turn away from idolatry. The message of society that human beauty is exclusively white, young, female, able-bodied, a Barbie doll pinup, or that a beautiful car costs $50,000 to have those smooth lines, or that you must paint your walls the perfect shade of taupe, or that you must do this to be worthy, or you must act like this to be okay, all that is nonsense. Beauty is a question of soul, of energy, of life, of kindness and care, of love. A young, white, able-bodied woman can be beautiful, but because of her heart and her deeds, not because of how well she conforms to the advertising ideal of the day. What makes Cinderella beautiful in the story we told this morning is her gracious welcome. What makes the ogre, the toad, beautiful is that he gives himself to the dance without hesitation. What makes the princess beautiful is that she learns something. What makes Glinda, the good fairy, beautiful is their witty sense of humor. I'm full of surprises. The question of what is beautiful is not fundamentally a question of taste. It is not decided, at least it should not be decided, by society or by advertising. It is not even a question of mathematical symmetry or the balance of colors. No, in the end, it is a religious question, a spiritual question, a question of the heart, a question of what you cultivate day in and day out, of what you learn to see. We need kindness appreciation classes just as much as we need art appreciation classes. We need decency makeovers much more than we need fashion makeovers. And we need to flip these hearts more than we need to flip this house. It is a religious question. What do you love? What do you love? For when you love something or someone truly and deeply, not because they make you look good, but because of your deep affection for their well-being, then they are beautiful. It is about what you love. Love kindness and find it beautiful. Love truth and find it beautiful. Love mercy and justice and resilience and find them beautiful. Love courage for the right cause and find it beautiful. Love the act of love itself and find it beautiful. And you will learn to see and hear and feel beauty, startling, amazing beauty everywhere. In eyes and hands and hearts, in the earth and all its creatures, in acts of creativity and care, in music and silence, in touch and texture, everywhere. When your heart is open and the scales fall away, may beauty be with you and shine forth from you each and every day. Amen. I invite you to rise in body or spirit. We're going to sing 1053 in your teal hymnal.